So instead of my usual up to 200 PowerPoint slides, I only have one slide this time. And Richard Deem is laughing in the background saying, I told you to stay with Windows 7 because in the transference of the file from my desktop, which is Windows 7, to my Windows 8.1 laptop, it wouldn't even copyright. And so this is what it normally would look like. But it won't copy the black background, and we couldn't even save it. There's three of us have tried. So, any rate. So Windows 7, yes. It's good to stay with that at least for now. All right. I'm going to take a different approach. Usually I like a scientific approach to topics. I'm an information freak, so that's why I have so many PowerPoint slides on a given subject. But today, be radically different. I'm going to be soliciting your opinions as much as possible in discussing this one slide. I'm, for the most part, not going to take a scientific approach, which is my favorite approach to take on a given topic. I want to take more of a hardcore, common sense / philosophical perspective on defining atheism. Now, we all know what atheism is, so that, you know, we could go home now, right? No. We're going to discuss exactly what it entails. What are the logical consequences of an atheistic point of view? So we're going to go one paragraph at a time. And here we go. Okay, in the beginning.
Are you telling me you have any slides?
I have one slide.
One slide. That wasn't it.
That wasn't the one I was looking at?
No. He had one.
Now it suddenly went blank on us.
No, he turned them off because he thought the slide was up there.
I had one slide.
I thought I was looking at
it. No, that's, I said I'm going to show it one part at a time.
Oh. That's how we said. Everybody heard the same way I heard. Oh, you're going to have to wait now because there's a
slide. Boy, are we quick to try to get rid of me this morning. It's the first time you've listened to me. What? Now that you start to listen. Yeah. Okay. All right. Atheism. Definition. In the beginning, there was absolutely nothing. Then, without any cause, stuff just happened. Okay? In the beginning, there was absolutely nothing. And I mean absolutely nothing. Then, without any cause, stuff just happened.
Spock would have problems with that.
Yes. Yeah, Spock is turning over in his grave right now with this beginning of the. You know, you're starting out on a very weak basis. Comments?
I don't mean to interrupt, but
that's the habit here, by the way, so that's fine. Some people that are atheists believe the universe was eternal in the past. But of course, as we know from this class, especially with the advent and discoveries of the Big Bang, that's not true. That the universe had a beginning. And by beginning, we mean a beginning of matter, energy, space, and time. Now, that's what the atheist is stuck with. So,
Are you sure it's on?
Pardon me?
Are you sure that we're at the end?
Now why did it go off?
Never came on.
Never came on.
Okay.
An atheist, a person who denies a belief in God.
Mm-hmm. That's the basic. Theism is a belief in God. Atheism, not a belief in God.
One interruption?
Yes.
Okay. Even before we discovered the Big Bang,
mm-hmm.
there was such a thing as entropy. That was known. It's a one-way process. So how could you have a one-way process that has gone on forever and hasn't reached its end?
Well, you have to realize that when we say nothing, yeah, it's not projecting again, but okay, that we, yeah, I think I'm going to be adding a sixth by the time this presentation is over with. You didn't have entropy either. There was nothing. There was not even black space.
I'm saying the people who claim that the universe has always existed.
Ah. Well,
how do they deal with entropy, a one-way process, is something that goes on unending?
Well, there is a law called the second law of thermodynamics. You're correct. Which says, and note, it is a law. It is not a theorem. It is not a theory. It is a law. That everything wears out, to put it in a mundane sort of way. You know, all usable energy will be used up, and there will not be any energy left to use. Okay? Now, since everything wears out according to this law, if the universe started an infinitely long time ago, we wouldn't be talking right now, because it would have died out an infinitely long time ago as well. See, the farther you push back the beginning point, the end of entropy will get pushed accordingly back. And so if you go infinitely back in the past, the universe would have ceased to basically exist an infinitely long time ago as well. So science, an atheist is faced with the second law of thermodynamics totally contradicts the idea that the universe is infinite in its age in the past. Can't get around it. It's a law. Okay. So there's absolutely nothing, not even the vacuum of space. Hard to think about, isn't it? Now, how can something come out of nothing without a cause? Any ideas? Or is that even possible?
Not possible.
The law of cause and effect is a law also, not a theory.
The law of cause and effect says that everything must have a cause, and what? The effect cannot be greater than the cause. There's never been an exception to that rule yet. Yes?
Well, we haven't figured out how it all clears itself, but we will.
You've heard that one.
That's called the so-called no God of the atheism gap theory. Okay? We can't explain it, says the atheist, but we'll get it someday. And sometimes that can be valid. Sometimes we find answers where we don't have any right now. But it can be an easy cop-out. Yeah.
There is an exception to every thing you need to have a cause. And only every effect must have a cause. And In order for anything to exist at all, there must be something which is self-existent and uncaused, and that would also inherently transcend all of reality.
You're saying logically, we have to eventually get back to an uncaused cause, which that gets into the whole God thing, right?
Yes. That's true even in monological position. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was watching PBS and there was this new discovery. I'm not pronouncing it correctly. I think it's called the Higgs boson or whatever. It's
yes.
It's like showing that there was a certain time and space where there was a beginning, and they were tracking it down. So that would be almost like a a natural way of showing that through science you can prove there was a beginning. So the, all these atheist scientists, how do they get around that?
Well, ultimately, at least philosophically and scientifically, they cannot get around this beginning. All right? We knew this as early as 1929, as you well know. Einstein, when he looked through the Hubble Space Telescope, admitted, I was wrong. Meaning, not me, John Davis, but Einstein said he was wrong, greatest mistake he ever made, and he admitted that the universe had a beginning. Okay? He didn't like it because of the theological consequences of it all. That's why a lot of scientists don't like it, because of the theological consequences. Because if there was a time when there's no matter, energy, space, or time, that means there had to be a pre-existing agent of some sort to have brought matter, energy, and space and time into being. And of course, we would claim that agent is the biblical God, Jesus Christ.
Amen.
And the criteria for that would be, obviously, that being has to be greater than this universe.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was in a prolonged discussion. We had some a lot of questions that we had to catch up on at RTB. And so they asked all the apologists to take, you know, so many questions and answer the people that had submitted these questions. And it was my fortune to get a hold of one individual who was an atheist and followed with about 30 responses. I won the award, I think, for that round. He said that the Big Bang is acausal.
How does he know that?
It just happened. There was no cause.
How does he know it?
In other words, by self-definition, the Big Bang does not need a cause. What's wrong with that thinking?
I lack a little bit of knowledge here. I think maybe I'm not the only one, though. We need to define better what is a quantum fluctuation from a vacuum. Because that's usually where they hit. And I don't know enough about that.
A quantum fluctuation in a vacuum assumes that there's a quantum fluctuation and assumes a vacuum. There wasn't even that before the Big Bang.
A vacuum always existed. That's what they said.
Yeah. Well, a vacuum is something.
Well, couldn't something have always existed?
No, by the second law of thermodynamics, it can't.
Didn't start until the vacuum fluctuates.
Ah, I see. How convenient, right? How convenient. Yes?
Quantum fluctuation requires the existence of time and space.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Quantum...
And that's what we're trying to explain.
Right. Quantum fluctuations occur in a spatial time kind of framework. But time didn't exist, space didn't exist, and again, quantum fluctuation is something of some substance.
I don't think so. I think the vacuum does not have time, space, energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if you assume that, the quantum fluctuation itself is something.
John,
it had to come out of nothing.
Can I give you the answer to this question?
Yes.
I asked you this question at the last skeptics forum,
uh-huh,
because it is a classic one that the atheists are coming in. They're saying that since quantum mechanics, you can have fluctuation where particles can pop into existence and pop out of existence. Couldn't that cause the creation of the universe? That's the atheist argument, which is what he's doing. So I posed that question to Hugh.
I remember the answer.
Right. So,
yep.
So if you had some other universe that had some quantum fluctuation that popped this universe into existence, and the problem with that is quantum mechanics is also very fine-tuned. It's not a random thing. So if you have something the size of the universe pop into existence, it has to return to that. So obviously these quantum particles that pop into existence, they pop back. And the larger the particle, the faster it returns to where it came from. So something the size of the universe would have been here, a point with, you know, a million zeros on it, it has to return. It can't just pop into existence and stay in existence and grow to this size. So mm-hmm. Quantum mechanics does exist, but it has limits. You know, it's fine-tuned. Just as the universe is fine-tuned, everything's fine-tuned, quantum mechanics is mm-hmm. also fine-tuned. It has laws, it has rules, and it doesn't just
produce big things into existence that stay there for us to enjoy and then disappear. It's also on the, only happens on the subatomic particle at our level. So you're talking about neutrinos, very small particles that pop into existence, mm-hmm. pop. We've never seen a complete atom pop into existence and pop out of existence. It's only subatomic particles. So you just can't use that as a source for the universe. The quantum mechanics just doesn't allow you to.
Yeah, the universe has been around almost 14 billion years, and a quantum fluctuation only lasts a very small fraction of a second, of a millisecond, less, even less than that. Yes?
I asked you, Ross, about quantum fluctuations, and his response was that it required the existence of time and space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another response was that quantum fluctuations require time and space. That is a little bit beyond my technical knowledge on that. But I know a quantum fluctuation is something that exists itself in space and time.
And they need to know a little bit more about that, because what I've heard, I think, brings quantum fluctuation with virtual particles. That may be true, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. But still, you're ultimately, just with the old folksy logic that something cannot come out of nothing on its own, which is sort of a bad way of putting it, because it didn't exist. Yeah. Now, so my atheist friend, who I was dialoguing with for quite some time, stated that, the Big Bang is acausal. And I said, well, that's a philosophical position on your part, not scientific. You are forced into that position. You have to assume that, because you have nowhere else to go. You have to assume something came out of nothing, which is contrary to all experience that we've ever accumulated in our tenure on this planet. Okay? He said, just caused by itself, you know, and therefore he was hard to budge on that. But I think he knew that he was between a rock and a hard place. You have to assume something without any cause happened. And I said, well, then you have more faith than I do. You have heard, you know, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. Okay. And in the last 20, 30 years, there's been so many scientific discoveries, as Hugh has often brought up, that the tables have been turned on the atheists in terms of evidence. Okay, the next paragraph here in the definition of atheism says, then stuff and pure luck said, let us make everything in man. And it was so. You notice a little bit of slight use of biblical language here. What's the ramifications of that? The stuff that was created, well, excuse me, popped into existence in atheism, acted with sheer luck, total random probability, to make everything in the universe. Any comments on that? We'll see what the ramifications are on that. There are many. Yes.
I like ramifications. It's almost like random.
Yes.
I looked up the word rational once in the dictionary. It comes from the word ratio. And it looks at to have something rational, there has to be similarities or differences. And then we take the ratio as a compare thing to come up with rationality. With absolute randomness, there's really nothing to compare to in any stable way to have rationality, as far as I can see. It's completely random.
Mm-hmm.
I call it irrational.
Mm-hmm.
When you go right back to it. I want to make a comment on absolutely nothing. Hugh said that there's five different types of nothing.
Yes, Hugh has said that there's five different types of nothing. And I'm talking about the one kind of nothing which existed before the Big Bang, which was the most absolute nothing of nothing of nothings. Yes.
Yes. That's a concept that still goes around. Some people do, some people don't. I happen to believe So I'm thinking there's something there before, but it's something that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And which can be God.
Well, also in Hebrews, is it chapter 11 or 12, said that, Hebrews 11:3, I believe, it says that that which was made from that which is not seen. And so when you hook that up with the ex nihilo of the word created, bara, in Genesis 1:1, to create something which didn't exist before, from that which did not exist before. So that's why the ex nihilo argument can and is used by many Christian scholars to say, literally, they agree with the Big Bang, that there was nothing before the Big Bang. Okay. So what does sheer luck mean? I mean, what does that have to do with us?
Well, it implies an intelligent agent.
Sheer luck?
Also, I was thinking that there's wide agreement among cosmologists that whatever it was that caused the inception of space-time, it was something that was inherently transcendent to space-time.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something that existed, but it was not within space-time. That was something outside of space-time.
You mean the pre-existing agent?
The
pre-existing
agent,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, the doctor got an award for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, this pre-existing agent that we talked about in the first paragraph, in the beginning there's absolutely nothing, then without any cause, stuff just happened. And the biblical point of view and the Big Bang cosmological point of view is, yes, a pre-existing agent had to exist before the beginning in order to bring about the beginning. The beginning could not cause itself. Nothing causes itself by self-evident logic. And unfortunately, my atheist friend, he tried to claim that everything happened without any cause. As I said, as an atheist, you're backed into that corner, and that's not a corner I would want to be backed into, because there's no escaping that corner. Yes?
I remember reading the book, The Fingerprint of God, a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Fingerprint of God. Mm-hmm.
What I liked about it, I believe Dr. Ross had like 20 parameters that showed there was evidence of intelligent design. So I think it boggles my brain, but if you're a rational person,
mm-hmm.
basically when you are negating God, God created spirit, soul, and body. The atheist is basically just focusing on the physical, on the natural, and it's basically throwing the spiritual kind of out as a possibility. So mm-hmm. they're just kind of stuck in that, you know, well, there's no such thing as spiritual life or the invisible. So it's almost like circular reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get through to them by...
By those 20 parameters that had to be just right?
Yeah, well, by the by logic. Because sometimes people choose to not believe in God because of ethical, moral reasons.
Right. It's usually a problem of, often more of a problem of will than anything else. Well, the person who just spoke, for so the it'll catch on the mic, that if I understand what you're saying correctly, is what about all the things that just have to be just right in the universe to make us possible, and therefore that goes against sheer luck or randomness. And I'm going to have a little fun with you. That was about several centuries ago that it was 20 parameters. We now know there's over 1,000. Yes. In 2006, we knew there were about 675 parameters that had to be just right in the universe to make an Earth-like planet possible. Not life, but just an Earth capable of supporting life. And that translates to 1 out of 10 to the 554th power odds of it happening by chance. In other words, it's not going to happen by chance. 1 out of 10 to the 50th is considered impossible. This is 1 out of 10 to the 574th power. And today, those numbers are even bigger. And I'm not going to go into that. That's getting more in the scientific approach. But yes, fine-tuning of the universe mitigates against sheer luck. When you roll a pair of dice, if they came up sevens, 100% of the time, and you rolled a trillion times every second, and they came up sevens, and that result continued over billions of years, what would you conclude rationally? Those dice are loaded. No doubt about it. But the odds of over 1,000 finely tuned parameters happening just luckily by chance is far more evidence that the dice have been loaded. Again, rolling the dice a trillion times a second for billions of years and getting the same result, the odds of that happening by random chance with non-loaded dice is nothing compared to these over 1,000 parameters and the universe having to be just right. Okay? Only one example, then I'll call on Ted. One example only. There's the mass in the universe. Atheists will say, well, why all that out there for just this one blue dot? The mass of the universe has been the same since the Big Bang. No more, no less. And at the time of the Big Bang, just after it, if you were to remove the amount of mass equal to about a dime, if you removed it at that time, we wouldn't be here. That's 1 out of 10 to the 60th power. Okay? That's equivalent to all the galaxies filled up with dimes. Remove one dime, no galaxies, no Earth, no life, nothing. That's just one parameter, and we have over 1,000 to go, and you guys are staying here until we go through all of them. All right? So, fine-tuning mitigates against sheer luck. Yes?
Well, we haven't really dealt with the non-physical reality that exists that consists of abstract concepts such as mathematics, logic, thought, truth, time. What about those things? Are they real, unreal? I don't believe in anything I can't see, hear, touch, or feel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about your sentence? I don't believe in anything I can't see, hear, touch, or feel. Does that sentence exist? I just wrote it on a piece of paper. There's ink there, and there's paper, but the concept, the idea itself, is that a real concept?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that a fantasy, or it doesn't exist?
Well, if everything's random, you can't trust anything. Right?
Right. So what about those non-physical realities?
All of man's rationale, as great as it can be, it means nothing, because if everything's random, how do you know your conclusions are sensical? How do you know they make sense? Maybe it's just random molecules that seem to make it make sense. You see, the problem with sheer luck, it's a very, very bad thing when it comes to explaining the meaning of the universe and life. Yes?
In my attempt to respond to Ted, John Lennox says that mathematics and the laws of physics are not pre-existing, and that they in fact just describe the actions of space, time, matter, and energy, which did not exist.
Mm-hmm.
So mathematics did not exist. Now, Plato might not have, and some other philosophers might not have agreed with that, but I think it's correct.
Well, for the universe to exist the way it does, math had to exist. The principles of math.
They might have existed in God's mind.
Yes. God used the principles of mathematics, he's the author of math, ultimately, in order to do what he did in creating the universe. They say, unfortunately, math is behind almost everything. And we don't... Now, the few of you who math, you love that. Let's look at the next paragraph. Therefore, because of the above, humans are mere chemical machines with no free will or love, made of only meaningless bits of purposeless stuff in a dying universe. Have a good day. Well, even the... Yes, that's a question that an atheist would have a problem with, but the atheist is stuck with the second law of thermodynamics in this universe, and so it will die. And atheists admit that know anything about science. And so it'll eventually die in entropic heat death. That's a phrase he would love to hear. Yeah. Yes?
This pure luck, it doesn't make any sense. Pure luck is in the camp of believing in Santa Claus. So it doesn't, when you say, or whoever says pure luck, it doesn't exist. So you cannot use that as basis what you're trying to rationalize.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, when something's finely tuned, it means there's design, right? If you see a machine with all of its component parts that are all finely tuned in order to make a machine, you know that those parts have been designed. And design never, and I repeat, never, 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 this is one time it's okay to say never, happens by chance. It happens due to a designer. Design, by definition, cannot happen by random chance. Just like the parts of the machine could not happen by random chance because they're finely tuned, machine to certain tolerances and so on, in order to accomplish the end goal of a machine. The universe is a giant machine, with over 1,000 of its parts needing to be finely tuned or machined, if you want to carry the analogy to that extent, that have to be just right. And we've never seen a machine yet that happened by chance. Never. It's always been designed. Yes?
Okay, this was off this topic and back about 3 minutes ago. I don't like math, but John Lennox, who said that mathematics was not a pre-existing thing, how would you explain the fact that, you know, millions of years ago, or thousands, hundreds of thousands of years ago, there's a guy in early Stone Age guy who has one stone, two stones, and he's got the concept of two, and then he knows he needs, say he wants to put, his wife wants to put two flowers, one flower on one stone and one flower on another stone. Meanwhile, there's something sort of that same kind of thing happening to another couple in China and then another couple on the other side of the globe. How does that happen if the concept of math does not really exist?
Mm-hmm. This lady is so brilliant.
She married you.
Well, that was the first stupid thing she did, was marry me. I had to say that because I live with this lady. Anyway.
But it is kind of a universal concept all over the earth. I mean, people understand that this corresponds, one of these corresponds to one of these, but there's more than one of these.
Well, they may not think of that as math, but the principles of math are behind it. Yeah. Sure. And God used the principles of math to create the universe, if you will. He created the principles of math that are ultimately behind it. In other words, God would never add 2 plus 2 to equal 5. It's just not going to happen. Can God make 2 plus 2 equal 5 or 6 or 7? No. 2 plus 2 to God is always 4. It never will be anything else. Yes?
I think the principles is a good idea. I tend to look at math as a concept that is abstract. It's a construct. And I might call it paint that is added to a house, the house of creation. And the paint is constructed. It takes on the form of the house. It's a fluid. Math is fluid. Whether it came from Newton or somebody else, it's not not necessarily the basic part of the house. It adds to the house to describe the house. So there's a little bit of difference there. Did it exist forever?
That would make for an interesting discussion. Yeah, see, I would claim there are 2x4s in the foundation would be the math, but that would make an interesting discussion sometime.
Right.
Yeah. Yes?
You mentioned that if the universe lacked the mass of one dime, that it couldn't exist.
No, that galaxies and planets and an Earth-like planet capable of supporting life would never exist. If you had removed one dime's worth of matter just after the Big Bang event.
I heard Dr. Ross has said this before, that every star, every planet in the universe is necessary.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah, and I know. But how did scientists come to that conclusion? Because to me, you know, if one star, one planet, or one of those wasn't there, it just doesn't seem comfortable.
Well, that's well established in the scientific literature. That figure, one out of 10 to the 60th, then...
John, you have to add the concept of time. If you took the dime out right now, nothing would happen. If you take the dime out when the universe was created, that's when it would cause the problem.
That's why I emphasize right after the Big Bang. Not now.
Yeah. You get the concept of time there.
Yeah.
Because things are much more spread out. Therefore, the elimination of something over here won't affect something over here. But when it's all tight like that, that would affect everything. Yes, sir?
Yeah, don't you get really quickly to a point with an atheist that it's an emotional argument? So the last thing you showed there about meaning and purpose, isn't that the way to approach the atheist rather than scientifically?
Well,
denial of all this rationality is an emotional denial.
Yes, it is.
You need to approach them on an emotional level.
The atheist position is actually, yes, it's more of what we get ultimately into that it's an emotional reaction. I don't want to surrender my life to an all-powerful God. I want to be my own God. I want to do what I want to do. And this is... this is typically what is ultimately bedrock behind the atheist position. Yes, it's not intellectual. But sometimes they do have valid intellectual questions, and we should try to answer those. I would never belittle an honestly asked intellectual question, because God said, love him with all our mind, and Scripture says, prove everything, test everything to see if it's true. And so when it's genuine, hey, it's great. Yes?
About that matter, taking the dime out.
Yes.
Matter that was created, that he said it never changes. It's always there. I mean, it never goes away. It changes. You know, rearrange the furniture. So couldn't that also, taking that dime out even now, I mean, that can't...
Well, even at this present time, that does not apply. That's why I emphasize, just after the Big Bang, if you took out one dime's worth of matter, you would not have any Earth at any time, anywhere in the history of the cosmos.
But what I'm saying is that dime, you said now something over here may not affect that, but that thing that's maybe going still has to be there. It turns into something else. But it still has to be part of the matter that God created.
But it may not affect whether you get an Earth or anything like that currently.
Right.
Yeah.
That all had to be there, even the dime worth had to be there.
Back just after the Big Bang.
Okay.
Now, may I add, and then next, is that the fine-tuning of dark matter, an amount of dark matter in the universe. It's about 72% of what's out there. And that's finely tuned to 1 out of 10 to the 120th. In other words, the 1 out of 10 to the 60th I said about, you know, all the universe is filled with all the galaxies filled with dimes. If you multiply that by 1 trillion times, 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 that's 1 out of 10 to the 120th. Now you remove one dime out of all that. That's the fine-tuning of dark matter. Okay, so fine-tuning means design. That's the bottom line. It never has meant anything else.
Yeah,
yes?
I'm scientific in that I'm a nurse and I'm not an astronomer.
astronomy you know, expert, but dark matter, is that like the black holes, like the planets in the space, in outer space, that are not stars or planets? Is that what you're saying?
Okay, so if I misspoke, I meant dark energy, not dark matter.
Oh.
Dark energy.
Oh.
It's finely tuned to 1 out of 10 to the 120th.
Okay.
Dark matter is another issue.
I needed a definition.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for that clarification. Yes?
I have a way of thinking about the small changes in the beginning by visualizing a point. From this point, there's two lines coming out, divergent, going out. And at the point right where they come out, and a little bit past that, a tiny, tiny change will equal a great big change.
Correct.
And how they
Correct.
Come out to be now.
Mm-hmm. In the case of what we're talking about, it affects the expansion rate of the universe, which affects how much helium versus hard metals that we get in the universe, and that affects whether you can get a planet like Earth, et cetera, et cetera. Yes.
So if you went all this time later, when the lines have diverged so much that a tiny change like that wouldn't affect where they are now.
Yeah, right now, you could take a dime's worth of matter out, wouldn't matter right now. Yes?
With regard to mathematics, it needs to be a problem because essentially mathematics is descriptive. Mathematics is the science of relationship, and it's really a description of reality, and that requires consciousness, which is something that would be necessary for a science of relationship.
Well, the discovery of mathematical principles sure requires consciousness.
Yes.
But we're going to get into that in this second to last paragraph. So if everything is sheer luck, now we're going back to the atheist paradigm. And believe me, there are atheists out there who've thought about this and have written about these three paragraphs and have fully admitted that this third paragraph is totally valid. But most atheists have not thought about it this way. Most atheists have not gone to the logical conclusion of what their philosophy will bring them to. And I think in a witnessing situation, it could be, depending on who you're witnessing to, might help them see, hey, here's the consequences of your atheistic position. And it just doesn't fit reality. It doesn't fit science. So if everything is sheer luck, why are we chemical machines?
A statement from Werner Heisenberg. Have you all know who Werner Heisenberg is? One of the founders of quantum physics. Smallest units of matter are, in fact, not physical objects in the ordinary sense of the word. They are, in a Platonic sense, ideas. Then, have you ever heard of James Jeans, a Nobel laureate physicist from two centuries ago? The universe begins to look more and more like a great thought than a great machine. Right?
It started as...
When you view a quark, or a photon.
Those are subatomic particles, excuse me, Ted.
Right.
Go ahead.
What you're looking at is the probability of observing a certain state of affairs. You have to observe the state of affairs. There is no photon. You're calculating the probability of that you will observe something that is going to occur. That's reality. See this chair here? One part in a million is an electromagnetic force. My fingers should go right through it. The electromagnetic force is repellent. When you look at the electron, you don't look at an electron. You have a probability that I will observe certain characteristics that are where the electron should be.
The effects.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's reality.
And
according to Werner Heisenberg, Schrodinger.
Now, if you're talking...
People have founded this stuff.
If you're talking to a Schroeder or Heisenberg, etc., those kind of arguments, I would say, sometimes might have some very powerful points of discussion. But talking to a common layperson, it gets a little too ethereal and their eyes gloss over. So it depends who your audience is. But humans are mere chemical machines. Is that a result of pure randomness? Is that a consequence?
When we visit your wife to start on the map and quote unquote cavemen or whatever,
uh-huh.
This is actually, again, an argument for God and us being created in God's image. One of the things that scientific discovery that Hugh had talked about is we discovered that the human brain is the only brain that's capable of advanced math. And more amazingly, obviously, that capability was there with the very first humans 15,000 years ago. You know, we just didn't develop the tools to use that portion of the brain. So we had this portion of our brain for advanced math all these years that we carry, waiting for, you know, calculus and trigonometry and et cetera, you know, fractals to be developed. But the hardware was actually...
Yeah, advanced math and survival of the fittest, it really doesn't help you survive in the wild. You know, while you're thinking about math, here comes Mr. Alligator and chomps you up. You know, it has no practical benefit in the terms of survival of the fittest. But sheer luck, chemical machines. Is that the inevitable result? Yeah.
It's just an interesting side note about the whole math thing. The ancient Pythagoreans believed that numbers were a fundamental aspect of reality, and mathematics was a tool of this investigation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, God used the principles of math, he invented them, to create this universe. So, again... if you have only randomness acting on inanimate matter, think of a Tinker Toy set, or maybe to update myself more, a Lego set. When you have randomness acting on a bunch of Lego blocks, what happens?
Nothing. They get more random.
They get more random. Well, that's true. They get more random. Randomness begets randomness. So, if randomness only begets randomness, you occasionally might get a few blocks adhering to one another in a certain very simplistic pattern, maybe, but not complex patterns. But you only get chemical machines, that's the point. Human beings, in an atheistic worldview, are only chemical machines. We are only a bunch of Lego blocks, very complex Lego set, but nevertheless, a bunch of Lego blocks put together. That's it. Yes?
John Lennox's response to that is, if that's true, why should I believe anything you say?
He's right. What I'm saying makes no sense at all, and what anybody else says makes no sense at all. Now, if all we are chemical machines, what does that mean? What's the consequence or consequences? You could do whatever you want. As the second sentence of this third paragraph says, we're mere chemical machines with no free will or love. Now we're starting to get personal. Now we start to hit a nerve. Down at the promenade, you know, my LA chapter for RTB, which is the biggest and most famous and influential chapter in RTB, okay? Not the LA chapter. Ross and Mark are not here, I can say that. But we go down and we do like a skeptics forum down at the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica. And I've told atheists before, I said, you married? And let's say I get one that says yes, they're married. I say, okay. Do you love your wife? Of course they're going to say yes. I say, no, you don't. Does your wife love you? Well, sure hope so, right? I say, no, she doesn't. There is no such thing as love in a Lego set. Lego blocks cannot love. Electrons, protons, neutrons cannot love. Quantum particles cannot love. Subatomic particles cannot love. It's impossible. the effect cannot be greater than the cause. And to have free will and love is much greater than the cause of pure matter and only matter, if that's all that existed. Matter cannot produce something greater than itself, cause and effect. The law of, as Dave, you pointed out, law of cause and effect. Love and free will would be a greater effect than the Lego block cause. And that's impossible. But that's what the atheist is faced with, right? You have no love. You think your girlfriend likes you? Think again. She doesn't. It's merely a chemical reaction to external stimuli. That's all it is. Nothing more than that. You think your parents loved you? Think again. Only reactions to external stimuli. Chemical reactions. That is it. When you have Lego blocks you get, and that's the only thing you get. Yes?
How do they respond to the concept of virtue? You know, the ethereal, spiritual concept that children, when they're growing up, they do have that sense of right or wrong. He took my toy,
yep.
You know. And so basically they're just negating the important part of how God created it. You know, and I do believe, what you said,
mm-hmm.
they are denying that because they really want to deny God and they want to be able to be amoral. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's they're using, you know, their illogical reasoning
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
deny the spiritual aspect of how God made it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear someone, you know, so your response, how do they respond? How do they rationalize against what you said about virtues or love? Or
in my experience, they really can't. They'll just think it's a complex virtues of love or whatever are just the result of, if you get complex enough, somehow these things spring into existence. But again, you're not being logical. 2 + 2 still equals 4. And if you have Lego blocks, you can't have anything more than Lego blocks. Period. They're not thinking it out. Lego blocks meaning protons, neutrons, electrons. Yes, sir?
Yeah, I've heard it said evolutionary necessity. Virtue is an evolutionary
term. Yeah. Of course, that's making a value judgment. Lego blocks don't make value judgments. We're back to that again. Right? Now, no free will. Uh-oh, Steve moved up front. I'm in trouble. Uh-oh. Yes, Steve. You're going to fully agree with everything I just said, right?
Chemical machines. There's an argument that I have not used that I'd like to see if it works sometime. And it's that atheists usually head toward the idea of unlimited. That way there's no box to put them in.
Uh-huh.
And they look for unlimited multiple universes or unlimited time or whatever.
Yeah.
But I would love to come back to them and say the universe is 13.7 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
Things have been limited, and from what we know of biology, randomness in biology doesn't even have enough time with a 3.8 billion year Earth, much less for the materials to make that coming from astronomy before to even have the molecules to make that. There's not enough time and randomness.
Mm-hmm.
So my ultimate zinger would be to them, your unlimited has been limited.
Mm-hmm.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
So that point. And then a gentleman back here made a comment about purpose. One time at Lake Avenue, I'd asked some teachers, science teachers and people interested in science, to come together and just talk for an evening and see where it took us. They were Christians. And within 15 minutes, we got on the one topic that went all the way to the end, and it surprised me.
Hmm.
It wasn't about science, but it was about the concept of purpose. If an all-loving, powerful God allows evil, is real, why is there evil and suffering? And they couldn't get off that.
Mm-hmm.
And we really didn't have the greatest answers. We had some. But I think that's part of this atheism argument, too, is purpose. What are we doing?
Mm-hmm. That gets into, before we get into purpose, which this last paragraph does, no free will. Now we're really getting down to something personal. I say, you have no free will. Again, Lego blocks, pieces of matter, whether you call them electrons, protons, neutrons, or Lego blocks, or Tinker Toy sets, the argument is the same. They can't have free will. There is no such thing as free will. All you are a complex set of chemicals that react to external stimuli, and that's all you have. Therefore, all beauty, all virtue, and all the things that we cherish that make us human beings are out the window. They really don't exist. Yes, sir?
There's a local lady, I can remember his name right, Hannah, she writes occasionally for Mr. Jim, she wrote a piece, Advocating Atheism,
mm-hmm.
And she wrote a fairly powerful piece. Her background is she's a Holocaust survivor.
Mm-hmm.
So she comes up with the moral argument, those are the guys who are I sat on that for a few days before I wrote a response and didn't get published. But basically what I wrote was, your conclusion that there is no God leaves you a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the behavior of Adolf Hitler or Mother Teresa, you're saying that we're seeing the outwork of the natural laws of physics. They could no more control what happened.
Can't blame him.
Correct. Can't blame Hitler. He was just responding to external stimuli.
In that argument, yeah. You start off arguing on the basis of what you believe is right or wrong, what God would be like, and you wind up with there is no right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's ultimately no right or wrong. And that gets into the latter part of the statement, that humans are mere chemical machines with no free will or love, made of only meaningless bits of purposeless stuff in a dying or decaying universe. Can Lego blocks have intrinsic meaning?
No.
No. You heard it from Steve. There's no. Yes, Dave.
John, I want to find your experience with him as mine. I found that most atheists, when you start talking to them, obviously it's not that they don't believe in God, but they're angry with God.
Right.
I've actually done that when I've had debates with people, and they're opening up their dialogue, and my husband throw up the question and say, you know, who hurt you? It was a Christian that hurt you. And of course, they just get stopped in the track, and they usually stutter, and they want to answer because they have an answer, but they don't want to admit it. Has that been your experience?
That's often the case. Atheists are mad at God, and therefore to define him out of existence in their mind would solve some problems, you see. But the problem remains. We have a loving, omnipotent God. Yes, Mara?
When I was an atheist, I wanted to be my own God.
Mm-hmm. In your case, goddess, right? Yes.
No, I wanted to be my own God. It's a spiritual thing. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I didn't want anybody telling me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was airhead at the same time, so I never thought of these things. But I just wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I wanted to be my own God.
Mm-hmm. That's often the basis for an atheist being an atheist. They just want to be their own God, and they're trying to justify it. So always be wise and use the Holy Spirit's discernment when talking with an atheist.
I got my hand up for you.
But
I'm actually getting a treat over here.
However, my wife raised her hand and she gets precedence over you. Yes. Go ahead, yes.
Oh, me?
lost your chance.
Your statement that there is no randomness in the universe.
I didn't say that.
I thought you did.
No.
I thought you said everything was by design. Well, glad you didn't say that.
I said all the finely tuned parameters are by design.
Yeah.
The rolling of dice, I would claim, could show randomness.
Okay.
You know, unloaded dice.
If everything were by design, then you're also getting to say there's no free will.
That's right. That's a problem. And yes, God does some mysterious combination of God's sovereignty and our free will. And I'm not getting on that topic today because we don't have time. Yes.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. It's not always that some person, a Christian or whatever, or the church, or official in the church, hurt you, or that you want to be your own God. I remember when I was raised in an atheist home and we never thought about God. And then I had a cat that I prayed for. I actually tried reaching up to God and praying for the cat. And the cat died. And then I was like, okay, you so-called God, you hurt me, so I'm going to hurt you back by not believing you. And that's when I became radical against anybody that, you know, talked about that stupid book that was just a bunch of fairy tales and all this stuff. I was just raging. So I was mad at God. So it's kind of like you kind of have to really rely on the Holy Spirit and
mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's often, not always, but atheism is often not based in any kind of intellectual position. They only use the intellectual position as a ruse or an excuse. But that's not the basis of their problem. And some people, there might be that case where they truly have an intellectual roadblock. They think they do. And, well, out of love, we would try to deal with that. So we are purposeless if we're just Lego blocks. Meaningless, no meaning. But we obviously have meaning. We obviously have free will. We obviously have love. Therefore, obviously God must exist, just based on that logic in and of itself. Just common sense. Forget all the intellectual gymnastics and semantic games that people play. Obviously free will and love exist. Obviously virtue and purpose exist. Therefore, since atheism cannot account for these things, but theism, God can. Now, put this at the bottom, which doesn't show up like it's supposed to show up on a black background. But I said, note, I say, thank God there's a better alternative after everything is said and done. I could not leave people with this.
John?
Yes, Steve?
Before I became a member of this church, I almost went to atheist. Well, what happened was, I was a member of a so-called church. I wouldn't call it a church. It was a cult. They believed in all kinds of heresies.
Mm-hmm.
They had their own view of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it didn't hold up to the evidence, right?
No.
Yeah, it didn't hold up. And somebody made a comment about time. That gets a little into the scientific vein. Yeah, Bouncer Dave is in the back of, is in the building. Yeah, the time issue, correct. Astronomers, like you said, that astronomers always knew evolution was not possible because it would take quadrillions of years for any kind of process like that to manifest itself.
Undesigned evolution.
Yeah, undesigned. And I would claim, no matter how much time you have, a random process could never, never build what we see in the world and universe today. So, no matter how much time. But just using a secularist perspective for a moment, they said mathematically it doesn't work. You know, a lot of people say, well, that's a lot of time. No, you don't understand. And again, this gets into the scientific realm. I'll leave you with this one and then I'll end in prayer. For life to exist on this planet, it existed as soon as this planet was capable of supporting life. As soon as there was permanent oceans and permanent rocks, life occurred in a geological instant. That is impossible on an evolutionary Lego perspective of reality. For example, if you took a simple protein of 200 amino acids, which is a very simple protein because they go over 1,000 in a chain, if you assumed every atom in the universe, just not in some prebiotic soup, which didn't exist, but somewhere, but you say the whole universe, every atom has a trillion chemical interactions per second with other atoms. To get that little simple protein would take you 100 billion years times 30 billion years to get that protein by chance. And a simple bacterium has about 2,000, I believe, proteins in it, plus a lot of other stuff. So that just shows you, this could be approached on a scientific level. But I wanted to take a different approach from a logical, philosophical perspective, and to try to show the atheists in love, that should be understood. We get maybe forceful and somehow we say things here in class, but when you're talking to an individual in real-time witnessing situation, always show consideration and gentleness toward them. You know, never berate them. But this was an attempt to show them this is what they're facing. And this is the inescapable logic of their position. And it doesn't hold up. Okay. So let's...
She had a question.
Since you're a guest, we'll have one more question. Yes?
Well, some time ago, I took care of a little boy. He was 8 years old.
8-year-old boy, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So he was worried about something serious happening to his parents. So I said, don't worry, God will take care of him. And he said, no, if there was God, nothing that would happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's sometimes very true. We know God does let sometimes, quote unquote, what we view as bad things. From his perspective, it may not be bad. Or there may be a greater purpose when something bad like sickness happens. There may be a much greater purpose he has in mind. You know, sometimes we can't see all the results and consequences and stuff. But sometimes, yeah, God does protect us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Okay, let's close in prayer. And I made it past 12:30, Dave, in spite of your attempts to. But thank you. We need Dave. Keep us in line. Lord, thank you very much for this time. Thank you so much for your existence, without which, indeed, we'd be in a purposeless universe, meaningless, that we'd just be chunks of matter with no goals, no purpose, no love, no free will. Thank you that you indeed are the creator of the universe and you created us. And you created us to be in a personal relationship with your Son, Jesus Christ. In your name, amen.